Well, hello, dear friends, dear fellow travelers on this little tiny blue and brown and white and red planet, this little dust speck that we live on. My name is Robert Beatty. Right now, I'm sitting in the beautiful little house that my community built for me here in my backyard. Since we're not using the meditation center, which is 12 miles to the east of us. I'm in Portland, Oregon, West Coast. The sky is clear and blue. It was absolutely filled with smoke for the last few days till 2 days ago. So here we are. I wish I could see you, but I'm imagining you. You look like human beings. So I come to you from a lineage through Burma, Lady Sayadaw to Uba Khin to Ruth Dennison to me. And Ruth Dennison passed away 5 or 6 years ago, but she was my teacher and dear friend for 42 years. So what I'm going to offer you is the deepest understanding I have of the Dharma, of the way things work, actually. And this is one piece of the Eightfold Path. The Buddha's teachings are very articulate on examining our worldview and looking at what our intentions are and how we speak and act and what our livelihood is. And also there's the recognition that in order to be free, in order to wake up, we really need to train the mind. And that's the work of meditation. So there was a comment on the list before we started that this person said, I'm not good at meditation. And I'd like to cover that that is the very first thing. When you sit down to meditate, what's your purpose? What are you intending to do? And a lot of people would say, well, I want to stop my mind from thinking. I want to experience bliss. I want to experience infinite love. And sometimes people will say, you know, I did a meditation group and I had this incredible experience where my body was filled with light and I was so relaxed and I forgot about my recent divorce and it was heavenly. And then that's what I want. That's a prescription for terrible suffering. Because to truly deeply practice meditation, a better goal than those pleasures would be, I want to learn to accept things exactly as they are. When my life is presenting me with pain, I want to be open to the pain. When my life presents me with joy or delight or pleasure, I want to be able to open to that. And so that means when we come to our meditation seat, it's really, we come to rest. We come to stop trying to do anything. And from that comes extraordinary healing and over time, profound awakening because we become familiar with our emotions and our thoughts and the way moods come and go, and we're less and less, I should say, at war with ourselves. So, if your eyes are open, I sit comfortably upright, and if your eyes are open, seeing. Let your eyes move around the room. Notice what objects there are. It's a miracle, actually. You can see this and that, a light switch or a window. In my case, I see a tree outside. Seeing and knowing. And then do whatever it is that you need to do to allow your eyes to close. And watch what happens. Be mindful of what happens. Seeing disappears. You can kind of play with this too, to let your eyes open and peel those eyelids back again and seeing. And then closing, not seeing. And there's something totally inexplicable and miraculous happening, which is that you're conscious. There's a body sitting here, but it's not a corpse. It's a living body. And notice that if you bring awareness to your buttocks where they press down on the cushion or the chair, or into your feet and toes, or into what you take to be your hands, you'll notice something. There's life there. Bring awareness into your face, into your cheeks and lips. There's life there. There's only life there. That's how you know it exists. Uh-oh. Something very remarkable happened a few years ago when a sperm and an egg came together in optimal circumstances. And the dance of fertilization took place and the dance of DNA. And then that fertilized egg implanted itself in just the right spot. And then you were born. And then you took your first gasping breath. And that breath has continued consistently over all these years. And it will continue until the last out-breath of your life. And that breath only exists one at a time, this one, and it only ever happens in the present moment. And so the first practice the Buddha taught was mindfulness of in-breathing and out-breathing. Notice, each breath starts. It expands, the chest and abdomen expand, or the air coming into the nostrils comes in and then goes out. And this happens one breath after another. Our breathing is part of the living system of the earth. The trees produce oxygen. We need that oxygen. We breathe it in It goes through the bloodstream and metabolizes sugar, and we breathe out carbon dioxide. We are the living earth, just like the trees, just like the whales. And so notice this in-breathing and out-breathing. We're watching nature unfold. And we make some gentle effort. Notice the word gentle. To stay here with breathing. And you'll notice that the mind wanders off. It wanders into the past, into the future. It can wander into all kinds of old conversations or worries about the future. It can get all caught up in wanting, desire, or disliking, or hatred. It can get all caught up in restlessness and agitation and worry. Or it can get very dull and sleepy. Can hardly pay attention, called sloth and torpor. It can get caught up in doubt. Why am I doing this? Could this possibly work? And so on. Just notice these other activities of the mind. And I'd encourage those of you that are thinking to text back and forth during this, I think you'll miss what we're doing if you're paying attention to that. So come home to your breath, the sensations of breathing in and breathing out. And notice that the mind wanders. In fact, what will happen is the mind will wander, and then in the midst of wandering, awakening happens. Knowing what's happening happens. At such moments, we come back very gently to breathing in and breathing out. Each breath has a beginning. We could say each breath gets born. Each breath goes through a life cycle. Breathing in happens all the way until the moment that it stops. And then breathing in, breathing out starts. And then there's breathing out until that stops. And then there's often a pause. And then breathing in starts again. You might think of the sensations of breathing as like a compass heading or a global positioning unit location. In the midst of all the complexities of a human life, there is the capacity of being here now with the sensations of breathing. And there's something about this intention, this direction, this location, that makes all the other happenings that occur in the mind visible, somehow observable. There is an attitude that we can bring to meditation. It goes like this. I aspire, my intention is to love and accept myself exactly as I am in each moment. And there's a second. Whenever I'm hurting, no matter how I'm hurting, psychologically, emotionally, physically, existentially, whenever I'm hurting, no matter how I'm hurting, I aspire to hold myself in sweet compassion. Each breath is a beacon, an invitation. Be here, be awake. If there's anywhere in your body that you experience tension, like in your forehead or in your jaw, just let go of that tension if you can. Some people find the practice of noting very helpful. You could note with the breath rising, rising, falling, falling. Then when the mind wanders, you could note wandering, wandering. Or if there are intrusive sounds, you could note hearing, hearing. And the same is true with worrying, with planning, with all the emotions, sadness, fear, loneliness, jealousy, desire, delight, bliss. Calling things what they are. Meditation is always and only about this moment right now. This is the moment that life happens in. The past is really a fantasy now. The future is really a fantasy now. But right here in this body with this breathing, with these thoughts, with these emotions, there is extraordinary vibrancy. This is the Genesis moment right now. One way to think about the breath in such a practice as this is to imagine that you're out walking or hiking and you come across a hammock. It's a beautiful sunny day and you realize this hammock is yours and it's always been there. And you just climb into it and rest. Maybe it rocks a little bit. And each breath is that hammock. Climb in, rest. Let your breath come and go by itself. If you discover yourself to be controlling the breath, then just let it go. And instead of paying attention to breathing, pay attention to hearing. There's this voice that comes into being and then disappears. There's whatever sounds there are in the environment. And no matter what you're doing, no matter what's happening in your life, from now until the moment of your death, there will always be this in breathing and out breathing. Noticing the mind's wandering. Don't fight with it. To fight with it is to be at war. And spiritual practice isn't about war, it's about love. And love in the very practical way that it means that there's room for everything. So there's the coming and going of the breath, rising, rising, falling, falling. Please be gentle with yourself when the mind wanders. Every time the mind wanders creates an opportunity for waking up. Of course, sitting meditation is just a small part of meditative practice. The same awareness, the same quality of mindfulness that you're using to come home to the breath now, you could use coming home to the feet in walking meditation. Or you could drive your car, being aware of seeing, hearing, sitting, touching. Seeing, hearing, sitting, touching. Each breath in is accompanied by awareness. Each breath out is accompanied by awareness. Sensations in the body. Now, in this vipassana, insight meditation, we gradually, moment by moment, discover that there's the breath and there's the body. There are also sense door experiences at the eye, the ear, the nose, the tongue, the feeling body, and the mind. And they're pleasant or unpleasant, and there's liking or disliking attached. We learn to observe that too. We learn to observe the thoughts and emotions and the stories. The stories from our childhood, the stories about the current political circumstances, the emotions about all those things. And we study them with one purpose in mind, which is to realize that none of them are permanent. None of them are really satisfactory, and none of them is actually a self. That's why this is so difficult and so profound. And there's another hand, another strategy and awareness in mindfulness practice, which is called loving kindness or compassion practice. It's very simple. One simple way is, on your next in-breath, why not repeat the great mantra, "I love you," with your name at the end? That's on the in-breath, "I love you." And use your name, maybe your name when you were a small child. And then on the out-breath, perhaps something like, "May all beings be happy." On the in-breath, "May I be happy." Try it, see what it's like. Imagine holding yourself as a small child or an infant and saying, "I love you, may you be happy." And in the out-breath, "May all beings," or maybe pick a friend or a loved one. Eventually, one even picks an enemy, a person one thinks is the enemy. And we learn to love them too, because we're all really one living organism here on the earth. So breathing in, "May I be free from fear and danger. May my friend or my enemy, may all beings be free from fear and danger. May I live with ease and grace on the in-breath. May all beings live with ease and grace on the out-breath." And we come to realize that we are just a part, crucially important part, of something of immense size and duration through time. We are that which is awakening. We are that in which everything occurs. And so now, recognizing that it's time soon to stop this meditation, you might form an intention to take it with you for the rest of today, for the rest of tomorrow, maybe for the rest of your life. I aspire to live fully in each present moment, to live impeccably according to my moral code, and to learn to love and be compassionate with all beings. And now bringing aliveness and awareness into your buttocks, into your back, into your hands, into your face. Notice your face is alive. Into the eyes. Notice the eyes. Let them roll around in their beautifully lubricated sockets for a moment. And then notice what's required, the intention. And then let your eyes open. Notice you have to pull back the eyelids. It's a little effort involved. And then being aware of seeing. Seeing. It's a mystery. No one knows how seeing occurs. And yet here it is. There's not only seeing, but there's also knowing of seeing. Mindfulness of seeing. And one thing I would encourage you strongly to do is when you get up from this meditation spot, don't do it unconsciously. Notice, I'm preparing to get up. Oh, this is my intention. I see it. I feel it. And now I'm letting that intention to stand operationalize itself. And then be mindful of standing. And exactly that we carry out through the rest of our lives. And that's what helps us become a Buddha or a Kuan Yin. We become awake in little bits and then in greater bits and then ultimately huge capacities of awareness grow on us, in us, as us. So let your eyes open. Maybe take a moment to mindfully stretch. Stretching. So, that was quick. I am open to sharing if you'd like to. I love you right back. I just put the title of my book up there, Mindfulness for a Happy Life. And I also want to remind you about robertbeattie.com. I remodeled my site just recently, and it's actually gorgeous. There's some very beautiful video to watch. And the access to the teachings from the past are there too. The Facebook and the YouTube connections are there. So, Yeah, it's amazing how a few minutes of meditation can alter everything about our perception of life. There's tons. Oh, you can also, if you go to portlandinsight.org, there's about 10 guided meditations there. And they're very powerful. There's a couple for working with serious pain or even mild pain, that meditation can be so helpful with pain, physical pain and emotional pain for that matter. So I'm watching the little statements come in. Oh, look at that. Whoa. That was quick sleuthing. Daily YouTube meditations with Robert. Good job. Oh, it's Christian. I see, of course. This is a pretty interesting channel. I would say both feel and be aware of. You can't feel it without being aware of it. But then also, the calmness won't last. Something will come in and upset the calmness. And then we do our very best to be simply present with whatever it is. Maybe it's agitation or fear or something. That we're not trying to get away from anything. Though we do, over time, develop a mind which is more and more able to concentrate. And suffers less. Suffering less is a good thing. I see typing happening. No, that's not true. I see three little dots going and it says several people are typing. Oh, as a first time in group meditation, this was a beautiful experience. Great. It should be beautiful. Well, it that's a trap, though, because sometimes it isn't. But I'm glad this was. I'm glad this was a beautiful experience. There are wonderful, calm, tranquil, beautiful parts of the journey, which I strongly encourage you to develop. I gave a talk this morning in my regular Sunday morning talk on how to go through a time like this. I mean, it's frightening here in the United States with Donald Trump in the White House and the way it, I mean, this could be the end of American democracy and he could win. And that would be catastrophic. And also the planet is warming fast. And that's part of the fires here in Oregon. And so that can be very frightening and so on. There's many things that are upsetting right now. And however, what I was encouraging people to do was find a way to devote yourself to your meditation practice so that even in the most difficult of times, you can find peace. You can turn the channel. You can change it. You know, you may be, who knows, you could be waiting in the waiting room for the emergency, at the ER, at the hospital, about your loved one. And you can be there and be totally freaked out, or you can be there and gradually calm yourself so that you're very calm and actually not suffering much. And then you'll be ready to help when the time comes. There are moments where I wish to ask a question. Instead, I find it's easier to come back to awareness and be calm. There's always room for questions, but it seems that there's always room to just be as well. That's nice. Picking your battles and finding your peace is the way of life, and I wish to be as peaceful as I can so I can find peace in the turmoil. Now, that's beautifully put. Robert, are suffering and negative emotions two different things? Like we can have negative emotions, but we got a nice job on that. I think you just answered this with your example. Exactly. One can be very depressed and even sobbing and be very mindful of it, and the suffering will be much less. Matthew, I have the privilege to meditate in complete silence. I like to hold my breath and listen to my heartbeat instead of focusing on the breath. What do you think of this kind of practice? Well, it sounds interesting. I'm not sure why you would simply not. I guess it's very interesting to listen to your heart, isn't it? But if you meditate much, I think you might find it more deeply relaxing to simply let go of any desire, the desire to hold your breath and listen to your heartbeat. That would come up as a desire, and you would just notice it come and go. And then there you'd be with whatever was happening. But it's certainly not a bad thing to pay attention to your heart. What an amazing thing the heart is, isn't it? Poof. Year after year, pumping away thousands of times a day. Also, if one's meditation is defined as holding your breath so you can then hear your heartbeat, I would think it would be more difficult to transfer that over to driving your car or taking care of children or doing all the other activities of life, because they're anything but peaceful. And the goal, I think, is to be mindful in all activities at all times. And the Dharma was with all of the gods began to eat. Rivers will dry up and five grains will not ripen. Pestilences will frequently take millions of lives. The masses will toil and suffer while the local officials will plot and scream. Sounds like America. No one will adhere to principles. Instead, the human race will multiply, becoming like the sands of the ocean bed. Well, that's pretty heavy, isn't it? Extremes of climate will be taken for granted. Beings of all races will mix together at random without regard for the noble and the mean. Oh, that's interesting. A little racism there. Their births and rebirths will cause them to sink and float like feeding aquatic creatures. Did the Buddha predict pandemics, climate change, and the possible end of humanity? I don't know. I don't think so. This is half a joke question. The Buddha did predict that his teachings would disappear. And he was quite articulate about that. But how could they not? Because everything disappears. So his if one were worried about anything, when people would come to the Buddha, he would say, "Are you suffering?" And then they would say, if they said yes, he'd say, "Well, what's causing the suffering?" And then he would lead into a talk on the Four Noble Truths. To be born, to participate in life, is inevitably to suffer because nothing stays the same. It's just so simple. Hard to accept, though. I know I was a very idealistic young boy. I was born in 1947. And I really thought in my college years, I thought we were going to bring an end to war and an end to all kinds of things, an end to the ridiculous distribution of wealth. And it turns out that we didn't. And it doesn't look like that's going to happen. So what the Buddha taught was not a social remedy. It was a personal teaching on how to become free from suffering. And therefore, how to become much better when we engage in being of service. Well, dear friends, I'm really glad to have had this time with you. I hope this is helpful.